Save money on your taxes and protect yourself from a lawsuit. That's today's episode. Let's dive into it. Hey, Freedom Fighters, welcome into the Investing in Real Estate show. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the show where we teach you how to build passive income, achieve financial freedom so you can spend more time with your family. And the vehicle that we use to get there is a very boring vehicle. It's buy and hold real estate. It's not sexy, it's not flashy, but it is the number one way to build wealth in this country. And that's the way that we've successfully done it. And that's what we talk about here on the show. I'm excited to have our guest today on to dive into some of the new tax law. I know we've been teasing this. We're going to do many more episodes about this coming up over the coming months. But Scott Smith is our first guinea pig here. He's an attorney with Royal Legal Solutions. He founded the company. And today we're going to talk about, obviously, the tax implications, how to protect yourself from a lawsuit. What is this new law that kind of came in under the wire at the end of the year? Had everyone lining up at their local real estate property tax office to try to get those property taxes prepaid. Some people paid money they didn't even need to pay. Now they're asking the local city, state governments for their money back. It ended up being a bit of a nightmare for attorneys and for accountants across the country. But hey, now that we've come through the storm, Scott is up for a little bit of air, and he decided to join us on the show today. Scott, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's great to be here, Clayton, and I'm really excited to talk to to you today and share with you guys, just a little bit about my experience as being a real estate investor myself for the past 8 years, and helping the 1,000 plus clients that we have right now with the real estate investments nationwide.
That's great. So obviously, you guys, I mean, how many phone calls were you guys receiving in December as this thing was coming through Congress?
I can tell you there's not a lot of sleep in the last month. Not a lot. A lot of investment in coffee has been a good one. I think that one's taken a sharp upkick in my life. But it was really exciting to see what are the ramifications of all these taxes and kind of how everything's shaken out now. That it's actually going to turn out really well for us as real estate investors.
Well, that's great. So let's start there at a high level. Just at a high level, the 30,000 foot level, are you happy with this law? What do you think that as a real estate investor yourself, and obviously you've got a lot of clients, are you overall just happy with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great for what it's doing for us. I mean, it depends on what exactly you're exactly doing with your real estate investments. But like, for instance, like the standard deduction was doubled. So that's really good for a lot of people. The 20% of your passive income that you're getting now is going to be deductible. It's excluded from taxation, which is a nice bonus. So those are really large tax savings for most all investors that are in the market right now. So I think overall, I would say that it was a positive bump for us.
All right, so let's dive into some of the specifics now, and let's talk about real estate protection under this new law. I mean, first, before this law, how has it changed? So before this law, how would you have instructed your clients to set up their asset protection?
Yeah, so the nuts and bolts of actually how the protection works is going to be exactly the same. So what we would typically do for everybody, no matter where you live, is we're using a series LLC in combination with anonymity trust. And we can get more into that in a little bit on what exactly all of that means. But in the nuts and bolts of it is that whole entity structure is considered a pass-through entity. And so then all of the income from it is then reported on people's personal income. And that's going to be the same way now as it was then. The difference is now what things are excludable and what types of deductions can you make off of that. So there's interesting things that happen too with the tax law regarding being able to deduct 100% of the furnishings of a property. So you might find yourself doing passive investments now with your rental properties and saying, well, it actually makes a lot more sense for me to furnish these and be able to rent those out at that point because a furnished place is going to rent higher and now I can deduct 100% of it immediately. Or if I'm in commercial real estate, I can actually deduct 100% of the roof, the AC. They're going to include all of that instead of commercial but not residential. So there's different plays to be made now.
So interesting. So let's unpack that a little bit more. So the idea of furnishing a rental property, what threshold would you have to hit to make that happen? Like, most of our investments are in C and B class neighborhoods, right? So there's not a ton of furnishings, although some of our tenants end up becoming quite a bit of hoarders. You know, I'm sure you've seen it too, where they've got, you're like, holy smokes, you've been living there for 30 years. So where do you, what is the threshold to say to yourself, okay, I should furnish a place?
Yeah. So I would say that you can really just kind of look to see like what your market is going to be, for that. I would say, you know, there might be a great market for C&D, furnished apartments or furnished dwellings that would come in for that are just, you know, sturdy general furniture for people to move in. You might find a lot in those circumstances that people don't have a lot and actually would really appreciate having furniture in place. I mean, think about like the model that works for Rooms to Go and a lot of these places that are giving people furniture that are generally lower income. The only reason they survive is based upon the fact that people need stuff, right? And they need it to be affordable. So I would tinker around with it, with your numbers to see like, how quickly can I pick up, you know, furniture off of Craigslist? Because to be able to be deductible, it doesn't have to be new. It just has to be new to you, right? So you can even pick up used furniture that's high quality and have your place and market it as a furnished apartment for relatively really cheap. And if you're looking for a market differentiator between you and somebody else, if you come in and say, hey, you know, we have all the furnishings available for you. It's ready to move in right now. You don't have to, you know, re-put together your life for the next couple of months. That could be a huge, you know, income boost to that piece of property, or at least get you that tenant that somebody else might enable you to get. It makes you more competitive.
So what does the deduction look like on that now?
It's 100% deduction.
Wow.
That you're able to do for the furnishings.
That's great. So that's, you know, hey, folks out there, if you've got some properties that you think would be a good candidate for that, that would be a great thing to look at. You know, we don't even provide appliances on our properties because, you know, that's not something that's normal in our markets. You know, our tenants provide their own appliances. They go down to the local, you know, Scratch and Dent, and they get a package of whatever, for $1,000, they're getting a fridge, a stove, you know, and then they take them with them so that we don't have to worry about maintaining them, having them get stolen, you know, those types of things. Those things can tend to walk off. You know, my first properties, yeah, I bought in Michigan years and years ago, we had a washer and dryer set just disappeared. You know, so I guess it's a fine line, right?
Well, the question comes is, how cheaply can you enter into the market? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if we're able to enter in really cheaply, and then we know that we're going to get these big tax advantages, you know, because of it. So we're getting, you know, already buying something used at scratch, and then we're getting a 30%+ reduction off of that. You know, maybe there's an opportunity in there to say that we're going to be able to furnish things, grab a little bit extra of a deposit to cover our hard costs in that, but then also have a market differentiator by saying like, we're providing these things for you here on site.
Right.
You know, so there could be, and I don't really know, right? Every area is going to be a little bit different. But my success in real estate has come from saying, well, let's be creative and let's start taking lots of little swings at stuff. Let's try one out here, one out over there. Let me joint venture with somebody on this type of deal. This is a little bit different play. And, you know, most of the times it doesn't work out to be a huge success when you're doing different stuff. But you only need one thing to work out of 10 that's different. And now all of a sudden you have a niche market,
right,
that you can solely focus on that's highly profitable, right? If we're just taking low-level swings that everybody else is doing, we're almost guaranteed to never have any real success.
Oh, I love that. That's great. That's a great point. So, folks, I hope you're taking some good notes on that. I'm certainly going to look into that and see if it's worthwhile on any of my properties. Investing in real estate is sponsored by Health IQ, which is an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. All you have to do is go to healthiq.com/investing to support the show and to see if you qualify. So what's really great about this, you get a free quote just by going to healthiq.com/investing. Or if you just mention the promo code investing when you talk to a Health IQ agent, they'll take care of you. So what's great is that Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on your life insurance for health conscious people. So if you're healthy, if you run, if you bike, if you take walks, if you swim, like I swim every morning. So 56% of Health IQ customers can save a boatload of money on their life insurance policy. It's that simple, because you're going to go through this process and they're exclusive to Health IQ, these savings. So they can save between 4% and 33% on your life insurance plans.
Health IQ can save those customers because they because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive, who sit around all day. So that's great. So if you like saving money, it's like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver. Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. So I put on my Apple Watch in the morning. The new Series 3 Apple Watch is great for fitness. I go to the pool. I do a great workout. And guess what? Lower rates on health insurance, life insurance, because I live a healthy lifestyle. And look, the other thing is, too, if you can track all that data. You can track all that data with your Apple Watch so it saves it. So you can keep a record of how much you're working out. So more, if you want to learn more today, it's really great. Go over to healthiq.com/investing. Thanks, Health IQ, for keeping us healthy and saving us some money.
Let's dive into, now we talked about, you know, the type of asset protection before. Let's look at some of the changes and where you would want to have your clients protecting their real estate now under this new tax law.
Yeah, so that the number one way you want to be able to protect your assets is you want to separate all of your operations from all of your assets. And this is coming down to the principle that rich people don't own things, they only control things. And the way they do that is because all of their business is run through a shell corporation, right? So that way, if anybody wants to sue them for anything that they're doing with their life, all they get to sue is this empty entity, right? And then all of their assets are hidden and protected inside of an asset holding company. What this allows you to do is to basically, in a lot of sense, almost operate in impunity in the world. And what was previously only available or used by the uber rich are now actually being used by all of my clients. They say that what we want for you to be able to do is to have all of your single family homes, multifamily homes, and apartment complexes all protected inside of asset holding companies. So that way it has that super high level of protection because we need that to be protected for our retirement. We can't afford to lose that or take those big hits that a lawsuit could spring up and hit us with. And at the same time, we're going to use a separate LLC, completely separate, to be able to run all of our business through. So that way when people try to sue us, what they end up being able to do is only be able to pursue the LLC that protects our credit scores from any judgments or, you know, any just pesky lawsuits that would come through and cause trouble in our life.
That's great. I mean, and so having those assets in separate LLCs, which we do, and we certainly talk about that here on the show all the time with our clients and with our listeners to make sure that you're not doing the sole proprietorship. Now talk about that though, investing as a sole proprietor. I mean, are you just waiting?
It's the riskiest way to do it.
Yeah, you're just waiting for trouble.
To lose everything, right? Statistically, as a real estate investor, you're in the highest litigated industry inside of the United States, right? So if you're an investor throughout your life, there's over a 95% chance that you're going to be involved in a lawsuit. So the question isn't if you're going to be sued. It's when are you going to be sued and what position are you going to be when that happens? And so if that's the approach that we look at this from, then what we really need to do is take a step back and say, what is an efficient way that I can make sure that I'm in the best position possible if a lawsuit occurs, right? And that's what we've specialized in our firm. We've taken that question and developed a system using a series LLC with anonymity trust, which allows us to infinitely expand at no additional costs. So as we acquire more assets, we don't acquire more overhead in terms of management, operation costs, our bookkeeping headaches, franchise tax fees, et cetera. Because then we're able to comfortably grow into our business throughout our life. And if done correctly, with the way that we do it, it's you set it up once and then it's good for the rest of your life.
Right.
You never have to keep changing stuff around. And the more that you change things around, is really expensive and a pain. So you want to get it done right to grow into as you personally expand. Is my recommendation as an investor, if you're serious about saying like, we're really going to do this, because you're really going to be acquiring some assets.
Right. So, and we have investors that start with, and we've warned them sort of ahead of time, like what Natalie and I have done, which is, you know, we owned, I think, about 5 or 6 properties before we started realizing we're doing it wrong. Right. And we needed to move things around, setting up that anonymity trust, making sure that everything's in the proper flow so that the individual properties are in LLCs reporting up to our holding company, then, you know, and then going through the proper process with the trust as well, so that there's very, you know, we don't own very much of the trust at all. You know, it's like completely separated. It's like, you know, a whole line. So we have investors that start with one property. They're on their 15th property now. And setting those things up ahead of time really can eliminate a lot of those headaches. I want to dive into some of the specifics, what you talked about with the Series LLC, just some basic questions, which may seem basic to you and me, but for people who are just starting out, their heads might be spinning right now. Can you explain what a Series LLC looks like and how easy it is to construct? And talk about it in terms of being a husband and wife. Like, if a husband and wife are going to set up an LLC to buy their first rental property, what does that LLC need to look like?
Yeah, so the way the Series LLC works is that there's only 11 states that allow you to form a Series LLC, but just like any other LLC, you can form it in one state and use it anywhere. Right? People have been doing that for forever with Delaware, right? So if you're a single person or a husband and a wife, and you're saying, okay, well, let's go ahead and get a Series LLC, you're likely going to be looking at states like Nevada, Delaware, and personally, my choice is Texas, not just because I'm located in Austin, Texas, but it's because Texas is on par with the protections of the other states while being cheaper than them, right? So it's just a cost issue. So if you're a husband and wife, you're able to then spin up a Series LLC in Texas, and then you can own property through your land trust in any other state in the country.
So that way, anybody that would be looking at, say, what property you would own or what property your company would own doesn't know that either you or your company actually own that piece of property, because it's hidden behind the land trust. The Series LLC is beneficial because it allows you to do that compartmentalization of each asset for free.
So just a question, because I've been instructed, and this is how we've set it up, which is we have, you know, LLCs in the states where we own our properties, right? So for your, you know, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, we have LLCs in those states that own the properties. And then those LLCs report up to our holding company in the state of Wyoming, and then it goes from there. So what's the difference? And is the way we're doing it wrong, or?
No, it's not wrong. It's just inefficient.
Okay. So we're just making a little more work for ourselves.
Yeah. It's just more expensive, right? So you could accomplish the same thing using individual LLCs, like one-off LLCs for each property, but then you're paying for the upfront costs as well as ongoing costs, registered agents, business addresses, franchise taxes, and state fees for each of individual LLC. With the system I'm suggesting, you avoid all of those expenses, right? The only reason that you would ever need a one-off LLC in the modern real estate investing era is for buying apartment complexes that need complex financing, commercial financing. And the reason for that is because the financing institutions themselves will only lend inside of very simple LLCs. So then we're stuck with that. But for everybody else in the world, what you would want to do is acquire the property personally, and then after the fact, move it into your anonymous land trust that's owned by your Series LLC.
Today's episode is brought to you by Sanebox, Sanebox. Now, if you asked me the single biggest workplace time waster, I don't even have to think about it. You know my stance on this. It is email. Email is the worst. In fact, a recent study found that almost 50% of the time that managers spend tending to their inboxes is spent on emails that should never have been sent to them or didn't even need to have an answer in the first place. But what if you could just press a magic button and never see those time-wasting emails ever again? Well, that's exactly what Sanebox does. With just a few clicks, Sanebox automatically gets your email under control. I love it. I don't know what I would do without Sanebox. I use it on 3 of my different accounts right now, and it filters out all of the messages that don't need your focus. And you don't even have to switch email apps. So if you like using Gmail, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yahoo, it works in concert with whichever email client you already use. It also has some really nifty features like Sane Black Hole. I love this, where you can basically take an email from, like, if you keep getting those really annoying emails from a spammer, you can just vanquish them, send them, you never want to hear from them again, drag it into the Sane Black Hole, and you'll never get an email from that person again. And Sane Reminders, that's great too, because you can actually set reminders for your future self. So if you want to set a reminder to follow up with this person next Wednesday, guess what? You can do that. You can customize it so that email will pop back up right when you need it. It's so great. I love it. See how SaneBox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Give it a shot for free. You can't miss that, right? That's great. All you need to do is go to SaneBox.com/investing so you get that $25 credit as well. Because if you start the trial and then if you decide to sign up, you'll get a $25 credit when you sign up. So here's how you spell it. SaneBox.com/investing. Make sure you go to that URL, SaneBox.com/investing. We are super excited about it. I love SaneBox, and it gets me down to SaneBox Zero every day. So that way I don't have to deal with emails on a regular basis. Thanks, SaneBox. I love you.
So for, let me take me through a typical transaction then. Let's say 123 Main Street, it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, and I'm going to buy it. You would recommend I purchase it in my own name first at close on it, and then transfer it to my land trust, which is owned by the Series LLC.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and even more particularly, what would be is, let's say that, you know, you could be a Delaware or a, you know, Indiana resident, right? And you could buy a piece of property in Georgia. And so then you'd buy the property in Georgia in your personal name. Then you would then transfer it into the Georgia Land Trust. The Georgia Land Trust is in turn owned by that one of the child series of the Series LLC. So just to backtrack for you real quick, how a Series LLC works is that there's one parent that's filed with the state of Texas or Delaware or wherever you end up filing it. And it can have as many children as it wants. And we call those child series of the Series LLC. Those are actually private documents. You're actually able to create them. It's a one-page document that you can print it off, sign it. And by doing that, you have legally created a new legal entity, just like an LLC. So each individual land trust has its own individual child series owning it. And that's where we get the compartmentalization of each asset. So instead of having one-off LLCs, full LLCs for each one of these properties like you have right now, you could have, you know, child series A, child series B, child series C, which are free instead of having to pay for each of those LLCs.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to get further down this rabbit hole with taxes in a moment to find out what the tax implications are here because, you know, you're paying an accountant obviously each time with these different LLCs also and having to file your taxes differently. We'll get there in a second. But this is blowing my mind a little bit because, you know, our LLCs, so let's say our Indiana LLC, we have multiple because we keep about $250,000 to $300,000 in value in each of those LLCs. And then we start a new one, you know, LLC number two, and then we buy the next round of properties in those LLCs. How does that change with value? I mean, if the one series LLC just holds all of it, it doesn't really matter then, right? From a legal perspective.
Yeah, what matters as a liability when we terms of overall value that it's holding is actually we look at it from the series level. Overall, what I always say is that once we have about $3 million in equity, is usually the sweet spot, in any individual, even Series LLC, just in total, I'll spin up a new Series LLC, right? And that's just because at that point we say, even, you know, if the worst case scenario would happen, we still just don't want more than, you know, $2 to $3 million in cash being held in any individual entity, no matter how protected it is.
So take me through worst case scenario if I get sued. So let's say, I don't know, tenant slips and falls, you didn't fix a handrail, whatever. They end up suing your Series LLC, or would they file a lawsuit against your land trust? How would they even go about suing you as the landlord?
Yeah, it's probably what would end up happening in that situation is they end up trying to sue the trust because the trust is legally the owner of the property. So let's say like a tenant slips and falls, that's why we have insurance and we always have good insurance, right? The whole debate on whether do I need an LLC or do I need insurance is actually a false debate because they actually protect against different kinds of risk. So we want insurance to be in place because insurance protects us against negligence, which is a legal term for just accidents that'll happen on a property. We need an asset protection plan in place if insurance doesn't work. Right. And insurance doesn't work in a lot of instances, either because it's a non-accident claim, like you sold a piece of property and somebody's accusing you of fraud, or you wanted to get out of a contract and somebody's suing you for breach of contract. or that you had a car accident that exceeded the limits of liability of your insurance, or that you have a catastrophic claim on your property because grandma actually fell through the rotten staircase or something like that and now wants to sue you, and the insurance company says, ah, that looks more like gross negligence. It turns out to be gross negligence every single time. It's a catastrophic claim because insurance companies are in the business of collecting premiums and denying coverage. So when the claims are really high, they'll always say, we're going to deny coverage based upon this thing called gross negligence. And then you have to defend yourself and then turn around and sue your insurance company. Contrast that with the risk of saying, if I have all my properties compartmentalized, if my worst case scenario happens like that, I only lose one property. That's a much more manageable position to be in than saying my insurance company denied coverage. Now I'm exposed like infinitely through everything that I own in all of my properties, all of my stocks, all of my private bank accounts, everything. That's the difference between asset protection
right.
and not.
Oh, this is blowing my mind because now So we're doing it. We're still doing it the smart way. We're just doing the less efficient way. From a legal perspective, the way that we have things structured, it's okay. But
yeah.
But we're just doing it inefficiently, and it's costing us a little bit more money, $50 a year for a registered agent or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you compound these things, right? So you would have to say that, like, what are all of the fees associated on a yearly basis with each LLC? And then you have to look at and say, does that also increase my tax preparation at all? Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. Your bookkeeping would actually be the same, whether you're using an LLC or a series LLC, because a series LLC is going to have you have to differentiate between each series, the income and expenses for each individual series. Although you can have, our recommendation is that that you must have a correct accounting records for each individual series, but it's not the case that you necessarily have to have individual bank accounts for each series. So you could run everything out of one bank account if you wanted to, if you had impeccable accounting records.
Wow, that blows my mind too, because God, we get checkbooks and checkbooks showing up here with different bank accounts for all of our different... Wow. All right. I've got a lot of talking to do with my wife after this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will as well. And that's not to discourage them. I mean, heck, how difficult is it to switch this over? You know, for instance, we've got a lot of LLCs now, and we've got a lot of different structuring. I mean, for us, it's probably going to be a lot more difficult. But for the person that has one LLC that owns three properties, and they wanted to move over to a series LLC, is that difficult?
Yeah, listen, we've been specializing in this for years now, right? So I've never seen any cases that we haven't been able to wrap up inside of a week.
Wow.
Okay. Because most of the issues are, we have a solid team here that puts together. It's not just me, right? So if it was just me, I'd say, this could take a while depending on what it is. But we have staff that if we have a really big case that ends up coming through that needs a lot of work, we just pull more of our resource onto it.
Right. Well, that's great to know. Okay, good. Well, then I'm going to be, we'll be talking again, I'm sure, about this. Before we let you go, and I wanted to get you out of here on time, we can do many more episodes together, Scott, so hopefully you'll come back as a regular guest here. We'd love to have you. I just wanted to talk about the way that the tax implications are different. So for us, you know, as an owner of like 20 LLCs, are we taxed differently than the person that just has a series LLC into a land trust?
No. So what's happening right now, likely, as the way that you guys are being taxed and the way you'd be taxed from the system I'm recommending, is that it's all going to be taxed as flow-through entities. If it's an individual or a husband and a wife or married couple, then what'll happen is that that'll either be reported on a Schedule C or a Schedule E of their income taxes on their personal return. And that's going to be true in either case.
All right. Good to know. Anything else you want to touch on here that we didn't touch on about the way that this new tax law will impact us legally? Any questions I didn't ask that you think are important for investors?
Yeah, just to make sure, I would say that you are, you know, with the income that you have, is that 20% deduction is going to be for business income. So just make sure that you're reporting it, you know, correctly. And the best way to do that is to have your LLC with an EIN number and have a business entity to be able to back up, you know, that deduction.
Great. Yeah. Really important to be able to take care of that. So if you make travel, make sure that you're accounting for travel and your gas mileage. And again, as you point out, have impeccable tax records.
because the IRS is just waiting for people to, as Tom Wheelwright likes to say, who's been a guest on our show many times, friend of the show, you know, they're looking to audit those meals out, those little mistakes. So just be careful and make sure you're keeping proper records. Well, yep. Scott, how can people get a hold of you? I know we mentioned, of course, your company, Royal Legal, but how do we, we'll have a link on our show notes page as well for this podcast, but what's the best way to reach out to your team?
Yeah. So we have the website is royallegalsolutions.com. You can call me at 512-757-3994. And we can schedule an appointment to talk, or you can reach out to me personally at Scott@royallegalsolutions.com. Either one of those will be able to set you up with a consult and get you a customized plan for what you need.
Perfect. Sounds great, Scott. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the show, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and pushing us up to the top of the iTunes charts. Thank you so much for all of your 5-star reviews, and thanks to Inc. Magazine for naming us one of the top business podcasts. We really appreciate it. Thanks to all of your continued support. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. Just do it the right way. Pay attention to what Scott says. We'll see you back here on the next episode, everyone. Much love to you all.